Hello, I'm Paul Gleiser. This is a special edition of Staff Meeting. Paul Gleiser sitting in for John Sims. And our guest this morning is George Roberts. He's the Chief Executive Officer of NetHealth, the Northeast Texas Public Health District. George, welcome.
Thank you, Paul. Nice to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Anybody listening can guess what the topic is.
Particularly with me on right now.
It's the coronavirus. George, there's an enormous amount of information out in the world about this entire topic, not all of it good, not all of it correct. And so one of our goals here today is to try to just synthesize information in a way that people can act on it and plan their lives around it. And the question I've asked of other people in the healthcare profession that have your expertise is this. We have had viral outbreaks before. I remember in 2009, the H1N1 pandemic, and there's been SARS, and there's been MERS, and none of them have had the profound impact on daily life that this one has had. Why?
Well, I've actually asked that same question myself to a couple people, and first off, the answer, I was actually asked a gentleman who, a physician who I have a great deal of respect for, and asked him, what was the difference? Why did we not do the same type of thing with H1N1? And the answer is, first of all, that H1N1 was a variation of the flu. And they could more readily, it was easily, they could in a more real time try to come up with a vaccine for it. But secondly, they had what they call antiviral drugs, such as Tamiflu and Relenza, that H1N1 responded to. So you had something, a type of medicine that you could give to people. You didn't have a vaccine early on, but you had a medicine that the H1N1 responded to. So that was the good news. And we also had some type of, the flu comes around every year, so we all have some type of immunity to it. You know, hopefully you get a vaccine. I get a vaccine every year, and we want to encourage people to do that. This is a situation where it's a novel virus. It's a brand new virus. We haven't seen this before, and it goes back, Paul, to, I mentioned the question kind of long here, but it goes back to the first time we heard about this, looked at the timeline just yesterday. First time we heard about this was December 31st, so less than 3 months ago was the first time we heard of this coronavirus thing. So brand new novel virus is part of the coronavirus family, but it has, we don't have any medicine that goes for it. We don't have any vaccine for it right now. There's some potential trials out there. We didn't have a lab test that really. They had to create a lab test to go along with this. So what's the big fuss is we have no immunities to this. So okay. we're basically, that's one of the big issues there. And we also, the bigger fuss is we don't know. We've seen it in China, and we're actually seeing it as we speak right now in New York, is the whole thing about overrunning the healthcare system. We're trying to protect ourselves. So if we get this bug, we don't all get this at the same time. So therefore, we're trying to, a lot of times, protect the healthcare system. Why do we want to protect the healthcare system? So because this particular virus, if you get really sick with it, you may need ventilator support. Well, ventilators, the hospitals here in East Texas, they have ventilators, but there's not a ventilator for every person in East Texas that might get sick. So we're trying to make sure that we don't all get sick at the same time. We have enough ventilators, that we have enough ICU capacity, and we also have enough healthcare workers to be able to take care of these people.
We live with, as a society, we live with death.
Right.
We understand that disease kills people, and we live with a certain amount of disease and count it as kind of a, not to sound cavalier, cost of doing business. In a bad flu year, 60,000 people will die of the flu.
That's correct.
And we kind of say, well, yeah, people do. I don't think until recently people knew that it was that big a number.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, we've had, last number I saw, I haven't checked it the last week or so, but it was, I think, 34 to 50-some-odd million people have had the flu this year, and we've had, like I say, the range is anywhere between 20 and 50,000 deaths this year.
And really, nobody was really aware of that until this story broke.
Right.
And you start seeing those numbers. Is there the possibility that we lack some perspective with respect to this disease?
I think, and that's a good question too. I would argue that the perspective we have right now is that we have something brand new that we're very concerned can overwhelm the healthcare system. And again, I go back, that's one of the key talking points here, Paul, is that we're trying to, you've seen the curve. probably your listeners have all seen the curve, the epi curve they talked about. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sure.
You give me, you're looking at me. Your listeners can't see the puzzle look on your face right now.
No, no, I don't.
So the epi curve, basically.
I know.
So we're basically trying to manage this by the activities that have gone on. The whole, we've heard the term, I don't know about you, but the term social distancing, I'm sure I really understood that 6 weeks ago. Had you heard that term before?
No.
No, no. Maybe physical distance, but not social distance. So the main thing that we have in our hip pocket to take care of this is us. So that's where we get into the whole social distancing thing. That's where we're talking constantly about washing your hands for 20 seconds. That's where we're talking about staying home if you're sick, staying away from sick people, keeping your hands off your face. Again, the best thing we have to do to control this thing at this particular point in time is us. So, again, we're trying to basically, because we know that people typically, it takes about 2 to 14 days for symptoms onset. So we realize that if we can get people to not, if we can stop the spread of this thing or limit the spread like the president has talked about, if we can limit the spread, potentially the healthcare system can handle the load that's coming. However, again, in New York City, you can just look at the societies that have not done this. China, for example, Italy's had a massive problem on their hand. The countries in Europe right now. But just in our own country, you see the issues that are going on in New York City right now.
Well, New York City is interesting you bring that up, as I saw statistics yesterday, and they're really pretty amazing. 27%, as of yesterday, 27% of all of the diagnosed confirmed cases of COVID-19 were in New York City. Another 27% in New York State, and I would be willing to bet you lunch that those are in counties that are adjacent to the New York City metro.
I would probably tend to agree with you.
Okay.
Of course, now those people spread out, so they probably start to spread around the metro area.
And then the number two state behind New York is New Jersey, and again, I'd bet you another lunch that those are disease cases that are just across the Hudson River.
Going back and forth.
And adjacent to the New York City metro. So if you take all of those out, nearly, almost, not quite, 6 out of 10 COVID-19 cases in the United States vanish if you just take New York and New Jersey out of the equation.
Right. And you also have the cases in Washington State, where the first case in Washington State occurred in January 21st, I think the date was.
Right.
And you have California in there. But we're, you know, quite frankly, Paul, the numbers right now in Texas, we watched our own numbers here in Smith County go up here just the last couple of days, but we also have seen the numbers in Texas start to really increase. And we know the numbers are going to go up because early on we couldn't do much. Lab testing really wasn't there.
Right.
And so now you're seeing there's still the public health capabilities of lab testing. The CDC test was not in plentiful supply. We've just been able to do at our own public health lab here at UT Health Science Center North, about 3 weeks ago, we were able to start doing testing, the actual test out there, which has been very helpful. But we now are seeing commercial labs come on the market. So I think the number I saw in the last couple of days has been we tested almost 14,000 people in Texas. So our laboratory testing rate, the number of cases that have turned up positive are anywhere from 5 to 10%. So it's a low percentage positive right now. But again, the whole effort right now is to try to limit this spread of this virus, because we know whatever steps we take, what we don't want to be in a position of is if we don't take action, we started taking pretty strong action really last week, and we don't take the actions we take now will impact us 2 weeks from now. And it's not like something that you look at the data and say, okay, well, I got to do this right now because you basically whatever action we're taking right now is to try to prevent the numbers going up 2 weeks from now, if that makes sense.
It does, and as I understand it, what you don't want, even if the numbers came, if they were spread over time, you could handle it. But if the numbers come all at once,
that is exactly it.
That becomes catastrophic. Where I was going with New York is I hear, you know, there are a lot of, as I said at the start of the program here this morning, George, there are a lot of people talking about this disease. A lot of people that are on television and in the media that are offering expert opinion. But is it fair to extrapolate the New York experience across the country when New York is geographically its own little special place where people are unusually dense, where the population is unusually dense, in an extremely high reliance on public transit,
right,
in an extremely close quarter existence that doesn't exist really anywhere else in the country? Is it fair to say you can't necessarily extrapolate the New York experience across the entire U.S. continent?
I think what I think what New York offers us is an opportunity to learn. I think if we, what have they done in New York? What did they do and what did they not do in New York that could potentially help us try to manage this? We'll say since we're here in Tyler, Texas, or in Texas, what are the lessons we're learning from New York that could help us here to try to limit the spread here? And okay. So that I think that, and correct me, I'm going off of information I just read that I don't think that they closed the school system down until just a few days ago up there. I think they've some of the stuff I think they've done about limiting the spread, they've actually done later than we have. So
De Blasio was famous. He said, "Are you going to close the schools?" He says, "No, we're not closing the schools. It'll cause all this hardship for parents who count on." Basically, he didn't say these words, but with the school system mm-hmm. is daycare, and it'll put hardship on
well,
people.
Well, in lunch, yeah.
Yeah, in lunch, and so he's for that reason he didn't close the schools, and perhaps that's going to prove right. to be a mistake, in hindsight. But again, I ask the question: is it fair to extrapolate the New York experience here and say, well, if it went up at that rate in New York, it's going to go up that,
I think
that rate
fair,
in East Texas?
I think it's fair to look at New York as a lesson. What can we learn from New York to try to limit the spread here? And I hope that people will, you know, I hope at the end of the day, that people will say, perhaps we overreacted in East Texas. That would be kind of a compliment, actually, to me that said, hey, we took the action we did to limit the spread of this menacing virus in our society.
That overreaction, though, comes at a high price. If it turns out to be an overreaction, it'll come at a high price. Because
It does come. But then the other thing is if we had not taken the action we did, then the criticism, then we load up the healthcare system, and then people can't get care, they can't get on ventilators, then
yes,
shame
sir.
On us.
That's
one of those things.
So
you're trying to manage, what's the risk here? We felt like the risk, and, you know, there's some, you know, we get a lot of our advice and counsel from the Texas Department of State Health Services and the CDC and people that really study this, and so we're taking a lot of our, you know, we're trying to learn the best practices of how we can best manage this situation from the folks that basically that's what they do. And so we're confident that this is the right steps that we're taking right now.
In a two-hour town hall on Monday that President Trump did in the Rose Garden, he said, and I want to get your take on this, mm-hmm. he said that if he waits for the healthcare industry, waits for the healthcare professionals, the doctors, to sound the all clear, their standard is going to be so high that you won't reach it anytime, and it'll come at such a huge price to the mm-hmm. economy, because they're going to wait till the last person is cured before they say it's
right.
okay. And meanwhile, you have created economic havoc in the United States. One of the things that a lot of people are concerned about, people that listen to this radio station are concerned about, is the economic price that we're paying, because we saw the unemployment numbers earlier today. They were mm-hmm. staggering. Five times the highest number of first-time unemployment claims ever
right.
happened this
right.
past week. Businesses are going to fail. People are there's pathology attendant to
right.
unemployment and the resulting poverty. That's a price to be paid for all that. Are we running the risk that the price is going to be too high?
You know, I heard Trump make the comment. We're trying to get everything kind of. I would like to get this thing completed by Easter.
Well, I was going to ask.
And I heard Tony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, you have a lot of respect for, talk about that. And what he responded is that the president has an aspirational goal here, but he's also listening to the scientists that are advising him. So I think my thought is it's an interesting goal out there. I hope the president's right, but I also think that we have to be mindful and see how this thing goes over the next few weeks. And I think that's really where, I guess, for your listeners right now, if the best thing that I can encourage them to do right now is stay at home, and whatever we can do to limit the spread of this horrible virus right now in our community, the actions we take at this particular moment in our timeline is what we will help us have a more positive outlook in the future. So what we're doing is encouraging people right now to stay at home, and particularly stay at home if you're sick. You know, we've had some situations around here, Paul, where people have potentially been sick or even had maybe a positive test, and they've gone out in the community. Well, this virus is very infectious. You know, basically, say if you, the example is, I've heard typically if I had the flu, for example, I could probably infect you because you and I are sitting in the same room together, but I probably couldn't infect the guy over there. It's a one-to-one type of infection rate. This virus, if I have it, I'm going to infect 2 to 4 people. So well, I've heard it's a lot more infectious than the typical flu.
I've heard it compared to the measles, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, that with respect, if you get a cold, you may or may
right.
not catch a cold from somebody who has a
right.
cold. But unless you have immunity via having prior had the disease or having the vaccine, if you've not had the measles and you have contact with somebody who has the measles, you're going to get the measles.
Yeah, because measles is super infectious. It's like if I have the measles, I can give it to 12 to 18 people.
So COVID-19 is closer on that continuum to measles than
right.
it is to a common cold.
Right.
Okay.
So we say 2 to 4, it's a wonky term called an R-naught factor.
There are not.
R-naught, basically you infect 2 to 4 people. One person infects 2 to 4. Again, with measles, the R-naught of that is, you know, one person infects 12 to 18 people.
Okay, so it's not as infectious as the measles,
right.
but
it's more infectious
than the common cold that we've been
flu.
Or the flu we've been living with all our
correct.
Lives.
Correct.
Well, let me ask you this, George. With respect to dealing with this in East Texas, what does success look like?
Success looks like that, you know, what I'm going to look at is how many people potentially diagnosed positive? Then how did that impact the healthcare system?
Okay.
So that's a reasonable question. Right now we're such in the midst of this thing of the planning, Paul, that the success to me looks like if we did not overrun the healthcare system as a result of this, that's a success.
Okay.
So if we have enough ventilators for the people that need that, if we have enough supplies, particularly personal protective equipment, you wouldn't believe I get calls now. People have this great deal of N95 masks that they want to sell me. Well, okay, well, that's but we have a shortage of personal protective equipment. We have so ventilators, personal protective equipment, and then healthcare workers. Again, right now, Paul, if somebody is exposed to a COVID-19 patient, say a healthcare worker is exposed to that, 14 days off of work for monitoring. Because again, why would you do that? Because you don't want the healthcare worker to potentially infect Paul Gleiser, who comes to the emergency room for treatment for something else. So that's been an issue already in our community. Basically, some positive COVID workers or people who did not have the proper protective equipment on when they were seeing a potential positive COVID-19 patient, that they have to be off for 14 days. So if you take that out, we want to have enough healthcare workers to take care of the needs that are out there. We want to have enough healthcare workers, we have ventilators and enough bed capacity to take care of everybody that we just don't crush the healthcare system in our community.
This is going to, well, let me, before I ask you this question, it's going to put you on the spot. Let me ask you a question that probably won't put you.
You put me on the spot as long as I've known you, so.
Okay, so a question. The 14 days, is that a different value with respect to the gestation period than other viral diseases with which we're familiar? Like common cold and flu?
Yeah, I wish I had the answer to that. I wish I had the answer. I don't know.
If you're exposed to somebody if you contract the flu virus, how long before you're symptomatic?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Because I
have to look it up. That's actually a good question.
Because is that different than the flu? My understanding is if you contract the flu, you'll know it within 48 to 72
yeah.
hours.
So
this is 2 weeks.
This is 2 to 14 days. But then I've heard. That's your measure, but then I've heard some people, I've already heard a couple of cases that maybe it was still after 14 days. So that's the problem. You know, going back to your earlier question that you asked me what time it is and I told you how the watch is made, the problem with this is a new virus. We're still learning. I was hearing some symptoms the other day that they're like, well, I hadn't heard that. So we're learning. Again, we're 3 months into this. We're learning stuff that's new each and every day.
Well, let's talk about the mortality rate, because there's a lot of debate about that.
Correct.
Yeah, if you remember your when you learned fractions,
right?
We know the numerator. We know how many people die, but what seems to be the variable here is the denominator.
Correct.
How many people have the disease? And without a good denominator, you can't get a good fraction on what percentage of people.
Right. So we knew that. So that's the big question too. So we know that we've heard our the information we got out of China is 3.4% was the mortality rate. Now, do we know that that goes back to the denominator question. Are we sure we know the right denominator there? And you and I can look each other in the eyes and say, there's no way we know the answer.
We don't know that. And more people could be infected than we know. And
right.
as we find more people that are infected, and if that number expands and the number of people who dies stays constant, then the mortality rate comes down.
Right. That's right. So we know. I heard something just today or yesterday that talked about we think the mortality may be less in our country than just looking at right now. I think we've had, I forget the numbers, but it's less than that 3.4%.
Oh, it's considerably less than that.
And yeah, so we know
I ran the number yesterday in New York. It's 1.6.
Yeah, so that may be closer to what it is, but that's still higher. You know, we talked about the flu numbers earlier.
The flu's 0.8.
That's still higher than the flu.
Yeah, what's basically double the flu.
Yeah, but still, we don't. And the problem with this right now, here's the other issue with this, with COVID-19. You or I, if we took our temperatures right, you look like you're running normal fever. I don't hear you coughing right now. I'm not coughing.
No.
I don't have a fever. And do we have COVID-19? Well, there's cases out there right now, particularly in the kids. The kids particularly may have this. Say they're not immunocompromised. They don't have a weak immune system. Just your normal healthy kid, male or female. They may have this, and may have the sniffles or something like that, and think nothing of it. But they may be carrying it, and so that's why we've been so, talking about the school system shutting down. Well, number one, to limit the spread, but number two is we don't want that child going home and giving it to their parents or potentially their grandparents who would get really sick with this. The kid may not know it. So we talk about this term community spread. There's no we know what we have right now in our community confirmed, but the reality is. We think there may be a lot more asymptomatic, is the wonky word. People without symptoms, they're walking around that may have this already.
In which case, then the mortality number is going to come down.
That's right.
Here's
another interesting thing about China. I did a deal at the National Press Club a few weeks ago. And that was actually broadcast on C-SPAN. It was about three Fridays ago. And there was an interesting young lady from China, and it was one of the journalists. And one of the facts I learned out of China was that, the mortality rate and the men were dying more. So I looked at it and said, okay, well, what are a couple of things that in China that might be different here? Well, number one, I checked the smoking rate. So the smoking rate in China is like 31.8%. Whereas here it's in the teens now. We're in the 15-16%, which is it's a whole lot different. Plus the air over there,
it's nasty.
It's nasty. And that's I hear. I've never been to China, but it's a whole lot worse. So I made the correlation. Basically, particularly the males or just particularly the Chinese. They're what they breathe every day plus the smoking weakens their lungs, so they're more susceptible to respiratory type of illnesses than they would be otherwise. And
right.
The young lady asked me the question about, so you're saying that smoking caused this? I said, no, I'm making the correlation between a weakened respiratory system and a respiratory disease that we're not familiar with, like COVID-19.
An already damaged pulmonary system is going to be more easily affected by an invader than a healthy pulmonary system, which is common sense.
Yeah, the other side thing of that, so I looked at the numbers. They broke it down between men and women and youth. Basically, the number goes up because almost 60% of the guys smoke over there. 60% of the males smoke over there. Everybody else is probably, 10, maybe even less percent. The women don't smoke very much, so it's basically the adult males that smoke.
Right. Well, then that also takes us to Italy, where the smoking rate is much higher than it is here, and that's why Northern Italy, they've had the problem they've had in Northern Italy. It became the epicenter.
Right, and I guess also the elderly population over there.
And I haven't
seen the dim, but I think
it's an older population. One of the things about Italy is that the population, they're not replacing themselves. The population is getting older, so all those things are true. Well, let's in the about 5 minutes that we have left here, this is where I'm going to put you. I promise to put you on the spot. Best case, worst case, how long are we tied up in this horrendous no man's land of not knowing when we get our lives back and when we go back to making money and having jobs and being able to go out to eat dinner and go to watch a ball game and the things that make life worthwhile?
Yeah, it goes back to the old, I was thinking on the way over here. So, I'm already, like you, ready to get back to normal. It's been, this is, my life has been abnormal now since this whole thing broke. So
well, my fear is that if we don't, the consequences will be as disastrous in a different way, right, but as disastrous as a real, you know, huge pathological disease breakout will be. We're going to have enormous right damage done.
So the answer, I wish I had, you know, you put me on the spot here. I wish I could look at you and say, Paul, you know, gosh, I can tell you for certain in 3 weeks we're done with this. And no, I just can't.
Well, what is the range based on what we know about how disease and how, right, how viral
well,
outbreaks
see, that's,
work?
That's the other question you should ask. So will the, when it gets warm around here, will this go away? And we just, again, new virus.
It doesn't seem to be affecting Mexico.
There's been some numbers in Mexico.
Yeah, but not.
But it's in South America. I was looking at the South America numbers, and it's in Australia has it. So it's. But the question is, since it's here already, will the seasonal change impact it? You know, I will tell you, I hope it does. I can't tell you for sure it will, again, because it's a new virus. So when do we get our lives back? I think that we, you know, the folks here in Smith County, the leadership, I've been sitting at the table with them on a daily basis. We're working on this daily. Right now, I think we're trying to work on what can we do to basically, we feel like we're early in the process. We're kind of going to see, okay, so are some of the steps we're taking, is this going to limit the spread? I think we got to basically, it's almost a, I think at this point, it's a, ask me next week what my answer is.
Okay.
I mean, that's, I wish I had a, I hear you, I feel the same way on my inside, but in my heart feels the same way. My head tells me I wish I could answer the question. And I think the governors wish they could answer the question. The health officials wish until we see how this thing plays out a little bit further, we can't answer the question. And well, I just hope upon hope, Paul, that people we can watch the healthcare system. And I guess what, again, going back to the, just hitting the talking points, you know, what can your listeners do? You know, people look to government, to other people, to sometimes solve their problems or deal with their situations. I would just make this urgent plea to the listeners. The best thing you can do right now is the social distancing, physical distancing from other people. Please, please, please stay 6 feet away from others. And again, why is it so important? Because if you have, when I speak to you, you and I are about 6 feet away from each other right now. So if I'm speaking, you're speaking, I'm not getting your respiratory droplets and vice versa. If I were to sneeze and cough, you're not going to get hit. Why is it so important? Because this COVID-19 is spread by respiratory droplets. So that's why we want the social distancing. That's why we want men and women to wash their hands. Please, if you are sick, please, please, please stay home from the general population. Don't go to the grocery store. Stay home. Let somebody else do your stuff for you. And if you need to be seen by a provider, please call them in advance. If you have the symptoms, Paul, which we hadn't really talked about yet.
No, I was going to add this.
Fever,
leave it. Okay.
Cough, and shortness of breath. And the fever could be not very much fever. It could be anywhere from 100 to 102. It could be a slightly less than that. If you have that cough, if you're concerned, if you think you were exposed to somebody, we're not saying names of people, right? But if you think you're exposed, call your healthcare provider. Let them know you're coming and get seen, and maybe get if they deem it that you should be tested for this, and rule it out. But stay home when you're sick.
Okay, we got a little more than a minute, but let me. It's East Texas. This is the time of year people are hacking and coughing, because the air
right
is full of all the things of the spring in East Texas. The coughing. How do we tell that cough from a cough that really should concern us?
I think it gets into I hear it's a dry cough. I also heard something the other day, and I've just heard a couple of examples here that people feel like they maybe lose their, and it's being just out there right now. And I've heard a couple of examples, and this may be losing their sense of taste and smell.
Okay,
and that's kind of a new thing. I just heard that yesterday. I'm like, well, I don't know if that's so. Is that one of the symptoms now? I can't say that for sure, but I've heard that mentioned with a couple of people that were diagnosed positive. So that could be something right there. So, again, fever, cough, shortness of breath are your main things. And, again, if you think you're in crisis, call 911. Tell them what the problem is. If you think you can go see the provider, call them in advance to be seen and potentially let your provider know if you need to be tested for the COVID-19.
Well, we hope we get through this. We hope we get through it soon. And we do hope that life gets back to normal.
We're Texans. We're Americans. We've dealt with a lot worse. We will get through this if we work as a team. This is a team sport now. We'll get through this together.
George Roberts, the Chief Executive Officer of Northeast Texas Public Health District, we thank you.